Do they need any rain in Portland, Maine? Does Texas pray for torrents? The water supply run dry from the ancient wells of Florence. Is the vintage grape in perilous shape on the slopes of Burgundy? Let none despair at the Aradea. They've only to send for me. Invite me to stay for a holiday and the rain...
You are listening to the voice of Geraldine Brooks, reading Notes Written on a Damp Veranda by Phyllis McGinley. A page from this week's edition of Anthology. This is Fleetwood. Each week at this time, the National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the Young Men and Young Women's Hebrew Association in New York, brings you transcribed Anthology, a selection of readings from poets, past and present, and the music to accompany their poetry. Our guests this week, Geraldine Brooks, Norman Rose, and Wallace Stevens. Delighted to share the news with all of you this week that Mr. Wallace Stevens has been awarded the 1955 Pulitzer Prize for Poetry by the School of Journalism of Columbia University. The particular book so honored was Mr. Stevens' Collected Poems, which we reviewed some months ago on Anthology. At the time, Harvard University very kindly sent us some special recordings of the poet reading from his own works. During the long process of recording, re-recording, shipping, and so forth, the records have lost some of their original brilliance and clarity, but I'm sure you'll have very little difficulty understanding Mr. Stevens. As a postscript to this week's news of his award-winning volume, we thought perhaps you'd enjoy hearing Wallace Stevens reading two of his own poems. The first is called Poem That Took Place on a Mountain, and then Final Soliloquy of the Interior Paramour.
He breathed its oxygen, even when the book lay turned in the dust of his table. It reminded him how he had needed a place to go in his own direction, how he had recomposed the pines, shifted the rocks, and picked his way among clouds for the outlook that would be right, where he would be complete in an unexplained completion. The exact rock where his inexactnesses would discover at last the view toward which they had edged, where he could lie and gazing down at sea recognize his unique and solitary home. Final Soliloquy of the Interior Paramour. Light, the first light of evening, as in a room in which we rest, and for small reason, think the world imagined is the ultimate good. This is, therefore, the intensest rendezvous. It is in that thought that we collect ourselves. Out of all the indifferences into one thing, within a single thing, a single shawl wrapped tightly round us since we are poor. A warmth. A light. A power. The miraculous influence. Here now, we forget each other and ourselves. We feel the obscurity of an order, a whole, a knowledge, that which arranged the rendezvous within its vital boundary, in mind. We say, God and the imagination are one. How high that highest candle lights the dark. Out of this same light, out of the central mind, we make a dwelling in the evening air, in which being there together is enough.
The poet Wallace Stevens reading Poem That Took Place on a Mountain and Final Soliloquy of the Interior Paramour. For the major portion of this week's edition of Anthology, we'll listen to selections from Verses of Today, as recorded on the second of the new RCA Victor albums, collectively titled Poet's Gold. Album number one, which we heard last week, included British and American classics read by Helen Hayes, Raymond Massey, and Thomas Mitchell. Mr. Massey, you'll remember, was our special guest. To represent album number two, the Poet's Gold collection devoted to the works of contemporary poets, we thought we'd enjoy talking to Geraldine Brooks, who, with Mr. Norman Rose, is featured on the new RCA Victor LP. Tracking down a busy young actress proved to be a rather strenuous, but we're happy to say, most successful chore. And with the help of that extremely handy device known as a tape recorder, we're ready and waiting to meet our anthology hostess for this week. So, if you'll join me, suppose we catch a cab uptown to the East 80s and the apartment of Geraldine Brooks. We caught Miss Brooks in mid-flight, you might say. She had just completed a television performance on Appointment with Adventure, and when we invaded her New York apartment, she was packing for a trip to Milwaukee, where until May 15th, she'll be appearing in the Philadelphia Story.
Come in, Mother.
What is Tracy Lord's line about the yacht in the play, Miss Brooks?
Oh, she says, my, she was young.
That sounds as much like Katharine Hepburn as it does Geraldine Brooks.
Oh, dear, this is what's driving me crazy. Because I have Hepburn's intonation so associated with Tracy Lord. You know, you can't help it. She was so wonderful in it. And I'm trying to play it like me and not like her.
Well, I'm sure either way it'll be very good. Yeah, the word is yar, and for those who haven't seen the Philadelphia Story, I suppose we ought to give them a small idea of what it means. It refers to boats.
Can we do boats? As Hepburn said, it meant, what does it mean? Fast, bright, quick to the helm, everything a boat should be.
There you are.
So now we all know.
Well, anyway, that was our reaction when we heard your new album, Miss Brooks.
Oh, thank you. But please, can't we say Geraldine, or even Jerry?
Oh, Geraldine is so pretty. I think I'll settle
you
for
do?
Geraldine.
All right, settle for that.
How long ago did you make this album, Geraldine?
We made it 5 or 6 months ago.
And it's out already? Or?
No, but it should be about 2 weeks or so,
mm-hmm.
Quite soon. Incidentally, it's called Poet's Gold, you know.
It's a beautiful name, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whose idea was the name and the album, as far as that goes?
Well, it was made by RCA Victor, and all of the selections were made by Whit Burnett.
So you had nothing to do with choosing the ones that you are reading on the album?
No, but I'm so glad that he did choose the ones he did, because some of them, they are among my favorites.
In other words, there was nothing new to you?
There were some new, yes, there were. Not the majority of them, but some.
Would you say that reading poetry aloud, Geraldine, is a help to up-and-coming actresses, fledgling actresses?
Well, I think not only to fledgling actresses, but even quite established actresses. I think it's very important for, even for diction, for voice placement, for emotional quality.
Do you prefer the poetry of the modern writers, or do you prefer the classic poems?
Well, I must confess a partiality to Shakespeare, but I also love Dorothy Parker, even Ogden Nash once in a while, you know. It, just a little of everything is wonderful.
Which is why you're just as glad that Whit Burnett chose them.
Yes, I am, because it would have been a terribly difficult selection. And what he tried to do was, he felt that it didn't matter whether it was an introduction or a reacquaintance, really, with the poets. He chose these poems because they were not only so lovely to read, but more so that they were, he felt that they were listenable, that they were poems that could be read aloud and heard and appreciated, perhaps even more so than just read to yourself. And he tried to get some lyrical ones, some emotional ones, some humorous ones, one of each type. And I think he did a very fine selection.
He certainly did, and it's, as you say, maybe just as well he chose them, because maybe you could never have got them down into one record.
Would have been impossible. Incidentally, I'm being very unfair saying I all the time, because Norman Rose did them with me. He does half of the poems. I do the other half, and he's very wonderful.
That's true, he is. We've had him on Anthology before. All of our listeners will remember, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But we'd like to hear you. We've heard Norman Rose, and we've met Norman Rose, and he's delightful, and he's very talented.
Yes, he is.
But we haven't met Geraldine Brooks before, so
all right.
This is a very special day. And we'd like to have you pick some of your favorites from this.
Well, I can pick my most favorite of all, Richard Cory by Edwin Arlington Robinson.
That's a favorite of mine, too.
Is it really? Mm-hmm. Oh, good.
Shall we listen to it?
Yes, I would like it.
Whenever Richard Cory went downtown, we people on the pavement looked at him. He was a gentleman from sole to crown, clean-favored and imperially slim. And he was always quietly arrayed, and he was always human when he talked. But still he fluttered pulses when he said, "Good morning," and he glittered when he walked. And he was rich, yes, richer than a king, and admirably schooled in every grace. In fine, we thought that he was everything to make us wish that we were in his place. So on we worked and waited for the light, and went without the meat and cursed the bread. And Richard Cory, one calm summer night, went home and put a bullet through his head.
You've just heard Richard Cory of Edward Arlington Robinson, which is certainly one of the most striking of all poems, don't you think, Geraldine?
Oh, yes, very much so. Particularly the shock ending, no?
It always leaves me shaken, that's for sure. And
true.
I can remember from when I was quite young, it was one of the most striking of poems, I think, to anyone of any age, don't you?
Absolutely. And every time you hear it, it leaves you the same way.
What's next?
Well, we can go to a lighter vein, if you like.
We like what you like.
Oh, I'm kind of a serious girl with poetry, but maybe just for a change. There's a kind of really very charming and amusing one called Notes Written on a Damp Veranda of Phyllis McGinley. If you want to laugh a little.
Do they need any rain in Portland, Maine? Does Texas pray for torrents? The water supply run dry from the ancient wells of Florence. Is the vintage grape in perilous shape on the slopes of Burgundy? Let none despair at the arid air. They've only to send for me. Invite me to stay for a holiday, and the rain will follow me. Rain is my lover, my apple strudel. It haunts my heels like a pedigreed poodle. Beyond the seas or across the nation, it follows me, faithful, on every vacation. Others back from Bermuda wander, burning pink as an oleander. The sun turns off like a Macy gadget the minute I set foot in Paget. It rains when I go to a Brookline wedding. Friday to Monday it rains in Redding. All that I've seen of a bay called Oyster is part of the ocean getting moister. The tops of umbrellas was all I saw the time I attended the Mardi Gras. And it hadn't rained for a year in Tucson till I was the guest the clouds let loose on. Whenever I travel, wherever I hie, tumult begins in the cumuli.
The mold creeps over the pillow's feather, and flaps of envelopes stick together. I never land with my bags in hand, but floods inspire the greenery. I bring fresh showers for the thirsting flowers. But I don't see much of the scenery. The desert's a rose where I am, God knows. But I don't see much of the scenery. So Noah was lucky, I guess, at that. I wasn't weekending on Ararat.
Ballad of Lost Objects, Phyllis McGinley. Where are the ribbons I tie my hair with? Where is my lipstick? Where are my hose, the sheer ones? Hoarded these weeks to wear with frocks the closets do not disclose. Perfumes, petticoats, sport chapeaus. The blouse Parisian, the earrings Spanish. Everything suddenly ups and goes. And where in the world did the children vanish? This is the house I used to share with girls in pinafores shyer than does. I can recall how they climbed my stair with gales of giggles on their tiptoes. Last seen wearing both braids and bows, but looking rather raggedy Annish. When they departed, nobody knows. Where in the world did the children vanish? Two tall strangers now I must bear with, decked in my personal furbelows, raiding the larder, rending the air with gossip and terrible radios. Neither my friends nor quite my foes, alien, beautiful, stern, and clannish. Here they dwell while the wonder grows. Where in the world did the children vanish? Prince, I warn you under the rose, time is the thief you cannot banish. These are my daughters, I suppose. But where in the world did the children vanish?
You say you're such a serious girl with poetry, Geraldine. Let's hear one of these serious poems.
All right. Extremely intense, this one.
Good. The intenser, the better.
W.H. Auden. Oh, what is that sound which so thrills the ear? Oh, what is that sound which so thrills the air down in the valley, drumming, drumming? Only the scarlet soldiers, dear, the soldiers coming. Oh, what is that light I see flashing so clear over the distance, brightly, brightly? Only the sun on their weapons, dear, as they step lightly. Oh, what are they doing with all that gear? What are they doing this morning, this morning? Only their usual maneuvers, dear. Or perhaps a warning. Why have they left the road down there? Why are they suddenly wheeling, wheeling? Perhaps a change in their orders, dear. Why are you kneeling? Oh, haven't they stopped for the doctor's care? Haven't they reined their horses, their horses? Why, they are none of them wounded, dear. None of these forces. Oh, is it the parson they want? With white hair? Is it the parson? Is it? No. They are passing his gateway, dear. Without a visit. Oh, it must be the farmer who lives so near. It must be the farmer so cunning, so cunning. They have passed the farmyard already, dear, and now they are running. Oh, where are you going? Stay with me here. Were the vows you swore deceiving, deceiving? No. I promise to love you, dear. But I must be leaving. Oh, it's broken the lock and splintered the door. Oh, it's the gate where they're turning, turning. Their boots are heavy on the floor. And their eyes are burning.
Geraldine Brooks in serious vein, reading very beautifully too, W.H. Auden.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to hear you read poetry, but you know, we've been a little casual where Norman Rose is concerned, haven't we?
Well, I'm ready to listen to Norman Rose.
I am too.
In fact, am I allowed to choose one for him?
Well, please do.
Because I know that he just adores T.S. Eliot. And he reads three of them, in fact, in this album. So why don't I just let him choose which one he wants to read for you?
Wonderful.
Lines to a Yorkshire Terrier by T.S. Eliot. In a brown field stood a tree, and the tree was crooked and dry. In a black sky from a green cloud, natural forces shrieked aloud, screamed, rattled, muttered endlessly. Little Dog was safe and warm under a Cretan eiderdown, yet the field was cracked and brown and the tree was cramped and dry. Pollicle dogs and cats all must, Jellicle cats and dogs all must, like undertakers come to dust. Here a little dog I pause, heaving up my prior paws, pause and sleep endlessly. Lines to Ralph Hodgson, Esquire, by T.S. Eliot. How delightful to meet Mr. Hodgson. Everyone wants to know him. With his musical sound and his Baskerville hound, which just at a word from his master will follow you faster and faster and tear you limb from limb. How delightful to meet Mr. Hodgson, who is worshipped by all waitresses. They regard him as something apart, while on his palate fine he presses the juice of the gooseberry tart. How delightful to meet Mr. Hodgson. Everyone wants to know him. He has 999 canaries, and round his head finches and fairies in jubilant rapture skim. How delightful to meet Mr. Hodgson. Everyone wants to meet him. Lines for Kuskus Caraway and Mirza Murad Ali Beg. How unpleasant to meet Mr. Elliot, with his features of clerical cut, and his brow so grim, and his mouth so prim, and his conversation so nicely restricted to what precisely, and if, and perhaps, and but. How unpleasant to meet Mr. Elliot, with a bobtail cur in a coat of fur, and a porpentine cat and a wopsicle hat. How unpleasant to meet Mr. Elliot, whether his mouth be open or shut. A Chorus from the Rock, by T.S. Eliot. It is hard for those who have never known persecution and who have never known a Christian to believe these tales of Christian persecution. It is hard for those who live near a bank to doubt the security of their money. It is hard for those who live near a police station to believe in the triumph of violence. Do you think that the faith has conquered the world and that lions no longer need keepers? Do you need to be told that whatever has been can still be? Do you need to be told that even such modest attainments as you can boast in the way of polite society will hardly survive the faith to which they owe their significance? Men, polish your teeth on rising and retiring. Women, polish your fingernails. You polish the tooth of the dog and the talon of the cat. Why should men love the church? Why should they love her laws? She tells them of life and death and of all that they would forget. She is tender where they would be hard, and hard where they like to be soft. She tells them of evil and sin and other unpleasant facts. They constantly try to escape from the darkness outside and within by dreaming of systems so perfect that no one will need to be good. But the man that is will shadow the man that pretends to be. And the Son of Man was not crucified once for all. The blood of the martyrs not shed once for all. The lives of the saints not given once for all. But the Son of Man is crucified always, and there shall be martyrs and saints. And if blood of martyrs is to flow on the steps, we must first build the steps. And if the temple is to be cast down, we must first build the temple.
Norman Rose, who shares this recording of Poet's Gold with Geraldine Brooks. Geraldine, before you go out into the rain and off to your train for Milwaukee...
Oh, the rain.
Can't we have a final little gift from you?
Do you mean by that a poem, sir?
I do.
Yes, I think we have an appropriate title, even Song for the Last Act, by Louise Bogan.
Now that I have your face by heart, I look less at its features than its darkening frame, where quince and melon, yellow as young flame, lie with quill dahlias and the shepherd's crook. Beyond a garden, there in insolent ease, the lead and marble figures watch the show of yet another summer loath to go, although the scythes hang in the apple trees. Now that I have your face by heart, I look. Now that I have your voice by heart, I read in the black chords upon a dulling page, music that is not meant for music's cage, whose emblems mix with words that shake and bleed. The staves are shuttled over with a stark, unprinted silence. In a double dream, I must spell out the storm, the running stream. The beat's too swift, the notes shift in the dark. Now that I have your voice by heart, I read. Now that I have your heart by heart, I see the wharves with their great ships and architraves, the rigging and the cargo and the slaves on a strange beach under a broken sky. Oh, not departure, but a voyage done. The bales stand on the stone, the anchor weeps its red rust downward, and the long vine creeps beside the salt herb in the lengthening sun. Now that I have your heart by heart, I see.
Thank you very much, Geraldine Brooks, for being our guest this week and for being such an attractive guide for the second of the new RCA Victor albums, Poet's Gold. Next week on Anthology, selections from the third and fourth Poets Gold albums. Our guests, by transcription, Helen Hayes, Raymond Massey, Thomas Mitchell, and Carl Sandburg. For those of you who have written in asking when you may purchase these new poetry reading albums, they'll be on sale at local record stores within a week or 10 days. If you don't see them displayed, just ask your dealer for Poets Gold, released by RCA Victor. Anthology comes to you transcribed each week at this time in cooperation with the Poetry Center of the YM and YWHA in New York. This program has been an NBC radio production, written and directed by Draper Lewis. Until next week, this is Fleetwood wishing you good luck and good readings.